Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Our first case for argument this morning is Ligas against Maram. Mr. Rado.
May it please the court, my name is Michael Rado from Sidley Austin. We represent the appellants, the Golden Interveners. Your Honor, the case comes to this court after the plaintiffs have commenced a class action against the officials responsible for administering the state of Illinois' programs for the developmentally disabled. The crux of the plaintiff's claim, which is brought as a 23B2 class action, is that the state fails to provide developmentally disabled individuals with care in the most integrated setting appropriate, allegedly in violation of the Americans with Disabilities Act, the Rehabilitation Act, and the Supreme Court's decision in Olmstead v. LC. The Golden Interveners are individuals who reside in intermediate care facilities for the developmentally disabled, also referred to as ICFDDs, who wish to retain the right to choose facility-based care, who were members of the originally proposed plaintiff's class, and who, as a practical matter, are continuing to be treated as if they are members of that class. After the Golden Interveners moved for intervention, along with two other parties, the district court below denied the motion for intervention, finding that the Golden Interveners' interest in maintaining the right to facility-based care was not impaired by the plaintiff's action, and that in any event, that their interests were represented by the state defendants. We believe that the district court erred in analyzing the impairment element for intervention by failing to consider the procedural posture of this case and to consider whether or not the Golden Interveners' interests would be impaired as a practical matter. Again, as I noted, this is brought as a 23B2 class action from which there is no ability to opt out for the class members, which provides very few procedural safeguards by the way of notice. And although the revised class certification decision, which happened after the Golden Interveners took the appeal, seeks to limit the classes, those who are residents of ICFDDs of 9 or more beds, who are entitled to services, and who would not oppose community placement, that does not remedy the potential impairment. By all objective fact-based criteria, the Golden Interveners are members of this class. And although there is a subjective element involved, it is a subjective element that the district court did not analyze and has not analyzed with respect to who are actually members of the class.
So let me, I'm trying to figure out in what way the interests of your clients are not otherwise going to be heard in this litigation. It seems to me there are two possibilities. One is the case will be settled, and in that event there will be a hearing. Your clients can object at that fairness hearing, and if they're disappointed, they can appeal without being parties. That's the holding of Devlin against Scardelletti. The other possibility is that there will be an adjudication that the ADA requires something in particular. And in that event, your clients have no particular bone to pick because the requirements of the law will be carried out. In what way can your clients be jeopardized, given those two seemingly exclusive outcomes?
The interests of the Golden Interveners are impaired in the event of a potential settlement precisely because they are being held to not be class members and therefore would not have the right to object to a potential settlement, as this court held in Felsen versus Andreas. However, they are being treated as a practical matter as if they were. And that's where the danger presents itself.
It's also, of course, you who asked for the class to be made narrower.
Yes, Your Honor, we did.
Well, and it does seem to lack a certain grace then to come and say, no, the class is narrower at our request. We're entitled to intervene.
Well, obviously,
For what it's worth, I don't think this class definition is tenable. You can't have a class definition that depends on the contents of people's heads.
A point that we raised at the class certification stage, obviously the class certification decision is not what the interveners can or nor have appealed to this court. However, the concern, yes, we did in opposition to class certification note that the subjective nature of the class presented a problem. Nonetheless, the district court granted class certification. So in the intervention context, what needs to be looked at is whether or not the interests of the proposed interveners are impaired as a practical matter. And unless and until the determination of who the individuals who are class members, that is, who request this relief are, we believe are interests impaired. To be clear, and we've tried to make this point clear before the district court and again here. We do not oppose the named plaintiff's right to the relief that they seek. We do not oppose the any person's right to community-based care, if appropriate, and chosen by the individual. We are concerned with the rights of those who feel differently. And here, in this context, the interveners, with no determination of who is actually requesting community-based care, are being treated as if they are unrepresented members of this class. And as this court noted in Vollmer versus Publishers Clearinghouse, that very well may be a prototypical case for an intervention where a person is a class member who is not being represented, whose interests are different from the class. And that's shown even with respect to the initial intervention and class certification decisions, where it was argued that class action treatment was appropriate, yet the interveners, who until that determination is made based upon any fact-based criteria are members of the class, were being adequately represented by the defendants.
Well, let me ask you this. You agree that the plaintiffs have a right to receive care in the most integrated environment possible, right?
Yes, we do, Your Honor.
So how would you have them enforce that right if not by requesting the kind of relief sought here?
The class certification is again, I recognize that we cannot and have not appealed the class certification decision. However, a determination made as to who requests this relief would allow the district court, as well as the appellees, to narrowly tailor the relief such that the plaintiffs and those situated similarly to them could obtain their right to community-based care without needlessly infringing upon the rights of those who would make a different choice. The problem presents itself based upon both the subjective nature of the class definition, the vagueness of the relief sought with respect to the final prayer for relief, which simply requires an injunction and a declaration that the state make available services to the class members. And while we don't necessarily have an objection to that relief, what we do have an objection to is making that determination in a vacuum, having the state by judgment or by settlement, because according to the plaintiffs, the determination as to who is a member of the class will be made when, as the other injunctive relief is carried out, that is, after judgment or settlement in their favor.
Well, we've got another problem with the class definition. The class has to be ascertainable before the judgment. That's the whole purpose of Rule 23.
That
right. But what we're now seeing is, what you end up saying, I think, is we're entitled to intervene because the class has been wrongly defined, and I don't think that's a good standard for intervention.
Well, it's not.
If the class has been wrongly defined, we will fix it eventually, and you'll be entitled to participate as amicus curiae.
The court will fix it if it's appealed, Your Honor.
Well, go ahead, finish answering.
I'm sorry. The concern is, and this court has made clear, the death knell for intervention cases is untimeliness. In Riedel 1, for example, City of Bloomington versus Westinghouse, Ragsdale versus Turnock. In all those cases, someone who arguably had an interest that may be impaired in the action was held to not be allowed to intervene to protect their interest because they simply waited too long. What this court focuses on in connection with intervention motions is what did the potential interveners know and when did they know it? And here at the outset, given the procedural posture of this case, we believe our interests are at risk. And for example, Riedel, which was relied upon by the district court as well as the appellees, in that case, a group of teachers and students who objected to new teacher certification rules under the Individuals with Disabilities Education Act sought to intervene, objecting to the new standards that will be promulgated. And towards the end of the opinion, this court held that although they may have had, there was nothing in the opinion to suggest that the court would have denied a timely motion for intervention, but rights can be lost, and this one was. And it's precisely the loss of those rights that the Golden Interveners are seeking to intervene to protect. At this time, there are plenty of reasons to be on notice that this case could affect their interests.
Reason you think filing an amicus would not be adequate?
Well, certainly there's a substantive difference with being an amicus. An amicus cannot
right.
raise issues not raised by the parties, is limited to precisely the questions raised by the parties, and that may present a problem. And as a practical matter, Your Honor, subsequent to the district court's motion for, the district court's decision on intervention, subsequent to the appeal, although it is in the defendant's brief, which does appear in the appendix, notes that one of the other parties who moved to intervene, the residents of Misericordia, in connection with class certification, moved to participate as amicus. The district court denied that relief.
Let me ask you one. If the plaintiffs had revised their original class certification motion to include only those who desire community-based care, would you still be seeking to intervene?
If the determination of who was seeking the relief was made prior to ordering the relief sought, that is, before the state is required to go back and reformulate its policies, if you could determine with any sort of certainty who was a member of that class, I do not believe we would be intervening. As I noted, the district court also denied the motion for intervention on the grounds that the interveners were adequately represented by the state defendants, and we disagree, needless to say, with that conclusion. As a practical matter, again, as I noted, we're in the strange situation based upon fact-based criteria, being treated as members of the plaintiff class, yet nonetheless it is alleged that our interests are adequately represented by the defendants. In this particular case, the Golden Intervenors' interest in retaining the right to choose facility-based care is fundamentally different from the state's ultimate objective in this action. And while the district court relied upon the fact that both the interveners and the state defendants raised the same arguments in opposition to class certification, we do not believe that justifies a finding of adequacy of representation. The fact that the parties are procedurally aligned at some point and maybe both filed motions to dismiss, both opposed class certification, as a practical matter, that should not be the test for adequacy of representation, because then, indeed, in any case where an intervener and a party file the same type of motion, it would be akin to a finding that intervention was unnecessary. And we don't believe that the fact that we identified the same, what we believe to be obvious problems with the class definition, that is, its subjective nature, we do not believe that that gives rise to a finding of adequate representation. The district court noted, in connection with the impairment requirement, which appears page 2 of the district court's opinion, appendix page 133, that the state has said that the interests of those who wish to retain facility-based care are not in any way superior to those who wish community care. And we agree with that determination. And while that obviously is, the district court was correct in saying that that doesn't show impairment, we do believe it shows inadequacy of representation. Neutrality is simply not advocacy.
Well, assuming that the plaintiffs were to prevail, and I understand there's problems with the definition of the class, but wouldn't the interveners still be entitled to receive care in settings appropriate to their needs and could avail themselves to the ADA, the Rehab Act, and the Social Security Act?
We certainly hope that is true, Your Honor. However, to the extent that the case was resolved by settlement, for example, a court may be very unlikely to reopen something that has been agreed upon by the parties. I mean, it takes me back to the timeliness argument, which is that you may have rights that may be impaired by a settlement, but the time that at least this court has said that you have to raise those rights is at the beginning. And we think as a practical matter, it impairs us to wait until the end in order to perhaps be able to more clearly show that representation is inadequate. If we wait until that time, then the right to intervene will likely be lost.
You requested relief in virtually three different alternatives, right? First of all, to reverse it outright, reverse the district court's order denying Golden Intervenors' motion to intervene. And in the alternative, you had the determination that you have no interest, that no interest may be impaired. And the third one was vacate an order and instruct the district court to consider Golden Intervenors' motion for permissive intervention.
Correct, Your Honor.
Right. So any of those would satisfy you?
Well, obviously, the third is a little more problematic, given the standard review. I mean, I think...
But doesn't that satisfy your question of timeliness?
Well, the third doesn't necessarily. The first obviously would. The second also would, because it's important that the distinction being the finding that there is no impairment unless the pleadings change, that's binding upon the interveners. This court is held, and the district courts have noted, that the adequacy of representation element can change as the lawsuit progresses. So with respect to the second request for relief, a finding that our interests are impaired, yet if the court agrees that we are adequately represented at this time, leaves open the possibility that should it become that more necessary in the future, or at least more clear that we're inadequately represented, we would be able to move for relief at that time. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. Ms. Welch.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. I'm here on behalf of the defendants' appellees, the directors Merrim and Adams. Your Honor, our remarks will focus on the inadequate representation, since the interveners are questioning the adequacy of our representation. And also, unless the Court has questions on the jurisdictional aspect, we would rest on our brief on that. And the plaintiff's counsel will address the impaired right and anything else, of course, in their briefs. The Court has suggested, and this is quite true, the interveners have other options. As this Court held in Bethune Plaza, the preferred option is for these interveners to act, at least now, when they concede. They concede both in the district court, in their and document 56 at page 11, and also in their brief, their opening brief at page 25. They concede that there's no conflict. They cannot identify a single conflict now. So they have, in effect, admitted that the representation right now, at least for now, is adequate. So what are their options? Well, they suggested one. Well, first of all, Bethune Plaza suggested that the better one, at least now, is to be an amicus. We didn't depose the Golden Interveners participating as an amicus.
I'm a little worried. Mr. Rado said that another of the putative interveners had sought to participate as amicus curiae, and the district court had refused to allow that.
The district court did refuse at that point. We did, but we have said, for example, that we are not opposed to the interveners acting as amicus. In addition, they could file.
Have you filed consents for them to file amicus briefs?
We haven't filed a form, but we have said explicitly in our filings in the district court that we don't oppose their filing as an amicus.
Said?
I'm sorry.
What have the plaintiffs said?
I don't believe they've taken a position. I don't recall.
What was the situation with the other potential interveners?
Well, again, Your Honor, they weren't.
Did you?
We did oppose the others.
Oppose them?
Yes.
Why?
Because we understood the Golden Interveners' concerns earlier, because they were opposing class certification and the complaint, because the class as defined was poorly defined. So the interveners at that point were just sort of me-tooing, and that's why we would have opposed their intervention at that time. But again, right now, they can act as amicus. They could file a conditional motion. Their timing question is really a red herring. Those cases hold. The cases they cite hold. You can't come in after settlement has concluded. They're already, the court is on notice, we're on notice that they want to participate if there's any relief. Well, if we win on the merits, there won't be any relief. And also, at that time, if there's any relief, if there's a settlement discussion, if there's a ruling against us on liability that there is an ADA violation, then what can happen is the district court, they can renew their motion if there's an inadequate they can make a showing at that time of inadequate representation. And also the district court could allow them to intervene to appeal if they object to the settlement. So they have plenty of options. There's no timing problem. And the problem is right now the parties conduct their own litigation. I mean, this court has said that there shouldn't be intervention by people who are not who don't have an interest at this moment, who cannot show a conflict at this time. Things may change, it's true, and if things change, then their conditional motion, which they still have not filed, even though we invite them.
Trying to think about what can go wrong from the perspective of the Golden parties. The worst thing that I could think of is that the district court rules on the merits in favor of the plaintiffs in a way that would lead the state to throw people who want institutional care out.
Mm-hmm.
And the state, although it realizes that the district court's ruling is erroneous, decides not to appeal on the ground that it is, after all, cheaper to have people out than to provide mm-hmm. institutional care. so that the state decides to take advantage of the district court's error.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Now, isn't that going to leave the plaintiffs in the golden parties in some trouble?
No. Because, Your Honor, what they can do is, if their conditional motion is on file, they can, and the court suggested this earlier about Devlin, what they can do is ask the court to intervene at that point.
Devlin has no effect in cases where that are decided on the merits. Devlin is about appeals from fairness hearings.
Well, they could ask at that point, at any point, that their interest would be affected, which it could be if we weren't filing a notice of appeal, ask to intervene at that time and file their own conditional notice of appeal. This court suggested that, I think it was in Felsen, as the right posture at that point, no, it was the Synthroid litigation. At that point, they can file the notice of appeal, they can reassert their motion, ask the district court to rule on it, and both would come up to this court. So in that regard, they're not out of luck if something like that would happen. With regard to the as of right, because the plaintiffs admit that there's no conflict, they admit that there's adequate representation, they forfeited with regard to the merits of the permissive intervention, and unless the court has questions, we ask to affirm on the merits the district court's decision to deny intervention both permissively and as of right.
Thank you, Ms. Welsh.
Thank you.
Mr. Lapertosa.
Thank you. May it please the court, Your Honor. First, I want to thank the court for accommodating my jury service. In this case, Your Honor, plaintiffs have brought discrete legal claims to enforce the right to choose to live in the community and be free from unnecessary isolation and segregation in institutions based on individual choice and consistent with professional judgment. That is what the complaint says, that is what the governing law says, and that is how the district court characterized this case, calling the plaintiff's relief limited and stating the plaintiff's complaint is replete with language on choice, demonstrating that the relief sought is not a mandatory community setting for all, but a choice of either a community setting or an institutional setting. This case is not about and has never been about forcing anyone, class members or not, out of institutions against their will or denying anyone appropriate care. The Golden Interveners are trying to intervene to prevent something that the plaintiffs have said they do not seek, that we all agree is not available under governing law, and that the district court has shown no inclination to order.
Well, let me ask you this then. How would allowing the interveners to intervene then pose a hardship to the plaintiffs?
Well, Your Honor, as this court recognized in Bethune Plaza and in other cases, allowing additional defendants raises the cost of litigation. It slows discovery. It may effectively block the real plaintiff from vindicating his own rights. This is a difficult enough case already. It will be even more difficult if we have defendants bringing in interests and philosophical debates that have nothing to do with this case. This case has nothing to do with whether there is or isn't a meaningful right to institutional care, with whether there is a right to choose what they term the best care option. This case is about enforcing the ADA's integration mandate and other similar measures under 504 and Medicaid. It is not about any of those. Those are all issues that are not relevant to any of the claims. There is going to be no decision by the district court on those claims. And as for their right to choose a care setting, as the district court recognized, that is what we are enforcing as well. Your Honor, I do want to address a few of the statements that were made about the fact that this is a class action. In the Golden Interviewer's reply brief on page 14, they say the class action device is a procedural matter, and I agree wholeheartedly. It does not deal with the merits of the claim. It simply extends the relief, the limited relief that the district court described, to other similarly situated people. In other words, people who do not want to be institutionalized and who, as a matter of professional judgment, are able to live in the community. I would also say that even being a class member doesn't mandate that you take class relief. The law is quite clear on this. Class members don't have to take class relief. That's why opt-out, I don't think, is relevant here. Opt-out is a provision that deals with B3 classes for monetary damages, where a plaintiff doesn't want to take less relief. A plaintiff may want to take, a class member may want more relief, and they opt out in order to preserve their right to bring that claim. That is not the position the Golden Interveners are in right now. They do not want more relief. They have what they want already, unlike our plaintiffs. They do not want any relief at all. Well, in that case, opt-out isn't necessary. All they have to do is not take the relief. That is true whether they're a class member or whether they're not a class member. Your Honor, in terms of impairment of interest, the Seventh Circuit has consistently held that impairment of interest requires what is tantamount to an Article III case or controversy. And there is not one here. There is not, on all the claimed interest that they have identified, given the procedural posture of this case, there is not going to be a ruling on any of those matters. If they want to bring a lawsuit to enforce a meaningful right to institutionalization, if there is one, they will be free to do that regardless of the decision in this case. They have not identified any Seventh Circuit case in any of their briefs where the standard was anything less than a finding that the putative interveners would not be able to raise their claims in another judicial forum. No one has claimed that here. And in summary, Your Honors, unless there are any other questions, I would just say again, the district court considered this case to be a limited case for relief. This is not about a broad ideological dispute. This is not about overseeing or overhauling or micromanaging the DD system. We don't want to do that. We don't have the resources to do that. This is about enforcing very specific civil rights on behalf of a group of people who are unnecessarily placed in institutions against their will and contrary to professional judgment. And I would say with regards to their concern that this determination be made prior to judgment, that is not how a B2 class works. This is a class where people will move in and out because their needs will change. If the district court came up with a list, it would be obsolete the next day. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, counsel. Anything further, Mr. Rado? You must have about 20 seconds.
Given that, Your Honor, I will limit myself to one point with respect to the defendant appellee's assertion that the Golden Interveners have conceded adequate representation. I would merely point out that what page 25 of our brief specifically says is that there is no evidence at this early stage of the proceeding that the defendants are currently antagonistic to our interests. It goes back to the point that I raised earlier, where we do not believe that neutrality, that is simply the fact that they don't actively oppose us, gives rise to adequate representation. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you very much. The case will be taken under advisement. The court will take a brief recess before the next case this morning.